Welcome everybody to another revolutionary episode of HomeKit Insider. It is me, Andrew O'Hara, here with my pal and co-host, and the real wonder that is inside a wonder ball, Stephen Robles. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. We actually have Apple products, man, that have been bought and coming and all that. It's an exciting time, finally.
I know. This is so weird, it's kind of trippy, because normally, for people who really follow the Apple space, we, as in the reporters and video people doing stuff, we are like swamped in like, you know, March timeframe. We've got CES going through like February or January, and then we have a tiny break. Then we're into March where we got hammered with stuff. But usually April and May is super chill.
Right.
And then we get hit with June with Dub Dub. And this year it is different because we're going to get swamped here in like April. We're going to get swamped in May. Right. And then it's Dub Dub. And then throughout the rest of the year, it just gets crazy as we get into big new updates and, you know, iPhones and Apple Watches and all that stuff. So it's going to be a crazy rest of the year. We're going to be busy.
It's pretty exciting, yeah. At the time that you're listening to this episode, we have AirTags in hand, but we want to talk about them at length, and so we'll talk about AirTags next week, or AirTag, whatever you prefer. I guess I'm getting AirTags because I ordered several. Did you get any engraved?
Yeah, I got a few of them engraved. I got one with my wife's initials on them and just a couple little GIFs. Not GIFs, but like emojis.
Wait, they're not animated. Hold on
a second.
They
do not animate.
Now, wait a minute.
What?
This is the first.
Don't you dare come at me for that, soft G. Don't you dare.
Yeah, it's Christmas GIFs. That's fun. I don't know why this has never come up. We're on episode 48 of this podcast, and I've never heard you say that word out loud. But now...
Because that's how it's pronounced. The man who created it says it's that way. That's how it is.
That man doesn't know how to use the internet, okay? The internet decides how something is pronounced.
What if I want to pronounce your name Stefan?
Most people do it anyways, because they don't know that PH makes a V sound, so, you know.
Well, that's how I like how it's pronounced.
Actually, most people say Stefan. I think because Stephen Curry kind of like ruined it for me, but anyway.
Yeah. Oh, but you decided your name is pronounced Stephen.
Well, I mean, I guess you could say my parents decided, but yeah, I guess it is decided. But
it is decided.
When you give something to the internet, it's like releasing a dove, and the internet does what it wants with it, and the internet has decided that it is GIF.
The internet is wrong.
If we thought we got engagement before on HomeKit Insider, this is going to be the one. There's going to be tweets galore. And I think I'm going to do a poll. Just watch for this poll when the episode goes out. GIF versus GIF.
No one is changing my mind. This is the hill that I will die on.
Yeah, you got giraffes and Christmas GIFs. I get it. So we'll talk about AirTags next week along with GIFs. But I want to know, Andrew, what you ordered this past Friday, because three big devices were released: the new M1 iPad Pro, the new M1 iMac, and the newish Apple TV 4K. I mean, it is new. You get the new Siri remote, but you know. So I want to know, what are you most excited about, and what did you get?
Well, I ordered a lot of things,
to be honest.
So first, with like the littlest guy, little Apple TV. So right. I ordered one new Apple TV. I still had one old Apple TV HD hanging around, and I refused to update it to the 4K version because I anticipated a new one would be coming down the pike. So I did finally upgrade that last Apple TV that was not a 4K model.
Gotcha.
So I did do that, but I also picked up a second Apple TV Siri remote because I wanted to update. Well, here's my thing. I'm probably gonna have to buy another one because the Apple TV remote is almost like, it's very like memory driven and how I use it and stuff. And I feel like if I'm going with two of the new ones and one of the old one, it's going to really irk me as I go from room to room. Right. We got our bedroom, we have our living room, and I have the studio. And if I'm like using one all day and then all of a sudden I switch to a different one.
That's terrible. Can't do that.
I'm gonna get confused. Okay? My fingers aren't gonna know what buttons press. I'm gonna be swiping in a circle around on the old
Siri
remote.
I get it. Well,
I'm very clear on that one.
Okay, but are you gonna get the 32 or the 64 gigabyte version?
I got the 64 gig. I do run a lot of apps and part of it's for work. I don't do a lot of like gaming, but I prefer to be somewhat like future proofed. If I have to upgrade one of my other ones down the line, that's what it is. But
so I typically get the 32 gigabytes just because I did not typically game on it. And Apple Arcade didn't exist, I think, the last time I bought an Apple TV 4K. But this time I'm upgrading to the new one, and I'm going to get the 64 because I'm going to put it in the living room where my kids do a lot of Apple Arcade, and I never want to try and manage the storage of my Apple TV again. I've had to try and do that several times and delete apps and games and all that, and so this one hopefully will solve that issue. Plus, the original Siri remote that belonged to that Apple TV is lost in some black hole, so we'll now have a Siri remote there. And then we'll see. I may use that 4K in the bedroom, even though I don't have a 4K TV, and then retire my Apple TV HD. So yeah, I'm going to go with a 64 gig this time.
Yeah, so apparently I need to start selling my Apple TV HD before that price plummets more. But that's right. Still available, isn't it? So that's still like it is. Current product, just with an updated remote.
It's available at some exuberant price that is just totally unnecessary. So yes, you can still get one. All right, so we're both getting Apple TVs. Talk to me about the iMac. Now, I know you're probably getting one to review, but are you personally going to get an iMac to use?
No, I won't be able to, unfortunately. I can't justify it because I do work on a Mac Pro,
right,
you know, day to day. So it is kind of hard to switch from a Mac Pro to that. I mean, I have a lot of like internal components. I've invested a lot of money into the Mac Pro.
Yeah.
So it makes it hard. I do really want an Apple freaking processor in my Mac. I mean, even little things like being able to run the Eve app. Like, I can't do it on the machine that I use day to day. So that's kind of frustrating. And I mean, the speed and everything on it is pretty crazy. The other thing I also want is an Apple display.
Ooh.
Like, I don't want to like hate on my display too much, but I got the LG Ultra Wide, and I feel like I've always had issues with it. Like, I've got this, like right now I ran like a line down the screen on the right quarter side.
No.
And it's just really annoying. But the ultra wide is so perfect for video editing. Like, it's so much easier to see a larger part of your timeline and split up my top portion between like my inspector previews and everything like that. So there's a lot, I really like the kind of the aspect ratio of the display, but it just not as quite as, you know, Apple quality as I would like. So I really would prefer an Apple display that's not $5,000 or $6,000 if we include the stand.
You're right.
So looking at the iMac, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's really nice. I love the the look of it is killer. I don't mind the front of it as much, and I know a lot of people hate that, but like the colors are fantastic and everything. I'd also probably go with a 27-inch if those were available.
Right.
So for me, I have to hold out. I did a video on this about why. Like, I really like the new iMacs, but I'm going to skip this one. I might be tempted with a 27-inch iMac. I might be able to, depending on Apple, if Apple did drop in like an M2 processor or something.
Right.
So I could see it then. I'm definitely getting one for review. I'll probably have one in the studio, so I'll probably feel like I'm using it even if I'm not using it day to day. But I toiled a lot over what color to get. Right. And you guys will have to just check out the video to see which one I end up picking up, because there was, you know, there's like seven colors, including the silver. So it's, what about you?
I am increasingly tempted by it, because I have my old 21.5-inch Intel iMac, and I bought that, I think, in 2015, and it's like base model. Like, it is an i5, 8 gigs of RAM. I don't use it very often. When I'm working at my like work desk, I have my M1 MacBook Pro, I have the vertical bridge dock, and an LG UltraFine. So like, that setup is amazing. It's great. That's where I edit the videos and all that. But I do have that iMac in another place that I work sometimes. To justify buying an entire M1 Mac just for a sometimes workplace, like, that's not reasonable. Like, I shouldn't do that. And I really want to wait until we see the next M-something processor, you know, because I think that next M processor is going to be amazing. It's going to blow everybody's socks off. Plus, it's probably going to be maybe a 30-inch display. You know, we went from 21.5 to 24 inches on this M1 iMac. Maybe it'll be like 30-inch, which would be a great size display. But it's really tempting.
Well, I think the biggest thing there with the display, Don't hold me to numbers, because obviously I don't have numbers in front of me, and there's a lot of math that goes into freaking displays. But looking display resolution would be the critical factor there. Like, what are they going to? Are they going to jump to 5.5K? Or are they going to stick with a 5K but decrease, you know, the pixel density? Which, if the display is a little bit larger, you're technically sitting maybe a little bit further back. But I feel like people don't change how far they're sitting away from their computers all that much. So if you're going to a 30-inch display, the pixel density may be slipping away from that retina range. I don't know. I mean, we're at 5K, so it's pretty high resolution already, but that would be my main concern. Just going to 30 inches like sounds nice, but if we're going to be just spreading out the pixels more, you're getting the same thing just on a larger display. and a lower pixel density.
Yeah.
So I'm not certain that is the right move, but it would depend on really what resolution display, what resolution panel Apple put in there.
Yeah, I would love to have it. I'm very curious to see them in person. I might make a trek out to the Apple Store just to see these colors because there are wide-ranging opinions on it. The white bezels on the front. I think D-Brand is already making...
They're light gray.
The light gray, yes. There was an interview on Upgrade. It's a podcast with Mike Hurley and Jason Snell, and they had actually some Apple PR people on the show to talk about the iMacs. Yes, they call it light gray, that subtle... whatever, and they talked about why there's no Apple logo on the front and why they went with white. It's an interesting interview, but I really just didn't want to see it in person. I'm sure it'll look really nice, but anyway, I'm not getting the iMac.
Honestly, I feel like I'm like in the minority of liking the light gray front bezels, because I'm looking at like my display now, and it makes it look like I have a tiny bezel around this LG display, but it looks like chunkier because it's very harsh.
Right.
It kind of distracts. Everything on my screen is light.
Right,
and then you got this black bezel, and it really distracts. So I feel like it would blend in more to the room if it was light. My walls, everything in here is light, bright, and that a black bezel of any size would just look dark and out of place. So I think the light would actually make sense in use, even though I get, in the pictures, and people don't love the white look of it.
Yeah, we'll see. But then we come to the iPad Pro M1. And I've been outspoken about this on all the podcasts, but I for sure got one of those. I went 12.9-inch and the 1 terabyte because I wanted that 16 gigs of RAM. So very excited about that. There was a leaker, John Prosser and another leaker was saying May 21st. Looks like it might be the ship date / when it's available in stores. So we still got about 3 weeks to wait until we have them in hand. But I'm very excited about that iPad Pro. What about you?
Yeah, no, I got the same thing. Got a 12.9-inch with the Magic Keyboard, the white one, the white one.
Ooh, the white one. Oh, man.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I like just to switch it up.
Sure.
Because I get tired of like the same things when I like to switch it up. And I'm a little worried how dirty it's going to get.
Right.
But I do like the white look of it a lot, just like nice and clean. And yeah, so 12.9-inch, 1 terabyte. We'll see where this goes. I kind of was also anticipating, who knows? This is dreaming, people. But I'm really hoping that we see Final Cut later this year.
Yes.
And I didn't want to shoot myself in the foot by getting a tiny storage option.
Right.
And then I'm trying to do some video editing. Like, even 1 terabyte doesn't even seem like nearly enough for video. Like, I've got, I don't know how many terabytes of storage here. Like 60 terabytes or something of video storage on my rig here, and I just churn through it so fast.
Right.
So like even 1 terabyte is barely, passable for like actually doing kind of work on. Like I know I can connect my Thunderbolt devices, but I don't always want to have to do that.
Right.
So
yeah, the two terabyte is tempting, but it's like $400 more for another terabyte. So I don't know. What does cellular? Do you get cellular on your iPads?
No, I don't bother. I just tether to my phone if I need to.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, even CES, everything like that, I've never had to bother with, there's nowhere I've been where like I needed cellular on my iPad versus my iPhone.
Sure, sure. Okay.
I think for a lot of people, it may be more like a work thing or something. They get a work tablet and they're on like a work cellular plan or something like that.
Right.
It's maybe a little bit easier when they're using it for work.
Work things. That's true.
Yes. Work tasks.
Working things.
Spreadsheets and
gifts
and email things.
Anyway. All right. Well, that's exciting. Listeners, let us know, what did you get this week? Did you get some AirTags in hand? What do you think of those? Exciting time for Apple products. So let us know. You can tweet at Andrew and I. Those Twitter handles are in the show notes. But now for some actual HomeKit news. Everyone was asking about Eve Energy for a long time. When is it going to be available? What's happening? So it has now officially launched. The Eve Energy with Thread is out. It's on Amazon, but it's kind of out of stock everywhere, so you can't really get one soon. But it is out for everyone that was asking, and so we'll put a link in show notes to on Amazon. And if you go to the Eve website, they just link you to Amazon, so it's not like you can buy it somewhere else. So it's basically on Amazon. It says temporarily out of stock at the moment, but listener, maybe you'll be in luck by the time you listen to this and it'll be back in stock. Then there's a new HomeKit light strip now available if you're in that light strip life. This is the Onvis K1 2 meter light strip.
So is it the K1 chameleon, and I guess it has multiple sections that can be different colors, which means it's, I think it's similar to like the LifeX in that regard.
Right.
But you can't do that through HomeKit, right?
Right.
So I think there's here actually, they say there's 20 separate units, and the 5 meter version has 50 individual colored units.
Wow.
Each with 3 RGB. So you can do a whole bunch of different colors with it. But I think you have to use the Onvis app, and then you can create scenes that can then be loaded into HomeKit.
Gotcha.
So similar to kind of like how the Nanoleaf GetUp works, you know, you got all those different panels. Each panel can be a different color. You can paint them all in the Nanoleaf app, save that as a pre-designed scene, and then include that in any other automations or scenes you want in the Home app.
Very cool. And the pricing, it's regularly going to be $50 for the 2 meters and $70 for the 5 meter. Right now, those two models are on sale. If you want to go catch them, it's $4 off the small one, $10 off the big one. We'll put a link in show notes to that as well. All right, well, an exciting news, especially for Andrew, who has been to this event multiple times, but CES 2022, now less than a year away, they announced that it's going to be in person, returning to Las Vegas. Andrew, how excited are you?
I am very excited. There's a lot of reasons, and I know it's like, you know, a little bit daunting or worrisome with the COVID stuff. We don't know where that stuff's going to be in the future, and any mass gathering just seems like a, you know, gamble. But I'm happy with it. There's a lot of reasons, but I think most of my time at CES, there's a lot of time spent on the show floors, but a lot of the time is spent in individual meetings and hands-on time and stuff like that. In that way, I feel much safer about it. I mean, I have had my dual COVID shots and everything now, and it'll be so easy to be able to jump to meetings. And CTA is saying normally they expect about 175,000, almost 200,000 attendees for CES.
Wow.
And for the 2022, they're expecting around 75,000. So
whoa,
a far smaller audience than there usually is. So less people, and I'm really hoping that it'll be nice and safe. They're kind of still holding off on announcing their COVID precautions. I think as they get closer to the actual event and they see how things are kind of shaping up and what's available and all of that, but they'll announce all that closer to the event itself, and then we'll have some fun times. So hopefully we'll get to do all the cool stuff that we usually do at CES, and we'll have PepCom and Showstoppers and Unveiled, and then a bunch of hands-on stuff with HomeKit stuff and Apple gear and things that we didn't get to do in 2021.
Right.
We had very few things being released, and I didn't get to try out any of them. Didn't get to bring you any hands-on experiences with any of the new gear that was coming out for 2021. So hopefully we can get back to a little bit of that here in 2022.
Very cool. That's exciting. All right, now you have something here in the notes. Filament bulb, 2 exclamation points. Why don't you tell me about that?
Yeah, now we've transitioned from the news portion to the Andrew has a problem portion.
Oh, okay.
And I don't think there's any answer. I just wanted to whine for 30 seconds. But we have the way our switches work in our living room are weird. And like one switch will control the fan, one controls the mantle light, then one controls the overhead light as well as like our entranceway to the door. They're all like those two lights are connected together. Hmm. And I have a brilliant switch controlling all those, like a three switch, brilliant panel there. My idea was, oh, I'm going to swap these lights out for Hue lights. Right now, they're all filament bulbs. There's two above the door, and there's three just above the living room. And I wanted to switch them all out for like Hue filament bulbs or Hue candelabra bulbs. And that way, I could dim them. The ones that are in there now cannot be dimmed, and they come on just really bright, so we usually just leave them off. And I'm like, I want a little bit more light in here. I'd love to be able to control these separately, or even be able to control like the ones in the middle versus the ones on the doorway. Hmm. So you can leave the doorway off and turn the ones on in the living room, stuff like that. And I was working on switching them, and I put the candelabra bulbs in above the doorway. Perfect. Worked great. And I go to put the filament bulbs in. They're bloody too big.
Oh.
The fan has like their jars essentially that go over the bulbs. And the bulbs that are in there now, they're very skinny filament bulbs.
Hmm.
The head, the globe of the Hue bulbs does not fit.
Hmm.
Does not fit.
Oh, what?
So there's no way for me to put in a HomeKit bulb into here. I can't find any HomeKit Lite. So it's just a normal like E26 or whatever base. And Hue makes three different bulbs. There's like a taller one, a standard size bulb, and then a globe one. Right, right. And all of them, the bulb part is too wide at its maximum to fit into my fan. And I'm really bummed because now I have no way of being able to control the brightness of that fan or those lights on the fan. And it's really frustrating. There's like a couple other filament bulbs that work with HomeKit. Sylvania has one. I think there's one more out there maybe, and all of them are just too big. So I'm stuck. Can't do anything.
Wow.
So that was it. I can't get it. There's no solution here until somebody comes out with a smaller filament bulb.
Weird. I guess our listeners can't really help with that because it just doesn't exist yet.
Nope. You are all useless to me with this problem.
Well, but that is not the case with our call to listeners that happened last week, because we had listeners asking about light switches specifically in the UK. We had several listeners reach out. One listener actually in Malaysia who, I guess they use the same kind of standards as the UK, and they also need switches that do not require a neutral wire. And so this listener recommended the Akara wall switch. So thank you for that recommendation, the Akara wall switch. Also, they suggested another brand that I had not heard of. So this listener recommended the Akara D1 wall switch, and also one called a Turncy, T-E-R-N-C-Y. So I'll put links and show notes to both of those. They had a lengthy description about those, so that's great. This person on Twitter, Zishan, mentioned that he uses a Lightwave RF light switches in the UK. And again, we were looking specifically for the UK because there wasn't a lot of options over there for light switches, especially without neutral wires. And that this is another one that can be used with or without a neutral wire. It does require a hub, but Apple HomeKit is there built in. So that's Lightwave light switches. You got the Akara D1 light switch and Turncy, T-E-R-N-C-Y. I'll put links in show notes to those products, but if you were in the UK looking for those kinds of light switches, there's a few options for you. Thank you, Listener Army, for coming up with those recommendations. And if you still have some, feel free to send those in. All right, so you have had the Belkin Wemo stage. We mentioned it on the past episode, but you've used it for a little while. And I was kind of curious exactly how it worked and how it felt. So I don't know, tell me about the Belkin Wemo stage.
Yeah, so this is the newest button controller guy for HomeKit. Now, there is a mounting plate that is included, just a clean, white, rounded mounting plate, and it actually comes apart.
Hmm.
So there are two different pieces. There's the outer frame of it, like the plate, and then the center part, which has the magnet that holds the Wemo stage in place. But what you can do is pop out that center portion and then can plug it in, like snap it in to any Decora faceplate that you already have. So if you have like a switch on the wall, you could open it up, tie off the wires on the inside, and then connect this in instead, and then have this as your wall switch. So it can replace essentially your existing wall switch, which I think is a really handy feature. You don't actually have to mount this anywhere else if you don't want to. So you have a little bit of, you know, flexibility there. And of course you can change the wall plate that is on here. So yes, if it can fit into any decor one, you could swap it out for one that matches your home better. So if you don't want a clean white rounded edge faceplate, swap it out for a decor one and then just mount it on your wall that way. There are adhesives on the back, so you can swap it out for any wall plate you want and then snap it onto the wall wherever you want this to go. So pretty handy there. The remote itself is a little chunkier than it looked originally, a little thicker than I thought, but it definitely is like a good size. It feels very similar to the Lutron Pico remotes.
Oh yeah.
Back of it just pops right open. The directions are weird. It's like I was trying to figure out how to take the back off, and I'm like, I'll read the directions. And the directions say remove back. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm just gonna keep prying at it until it pops off. So there's a replaceable coin cell battery in the back. Then there are three buttons down the front, each kind of like a little depressed dimple. The top one has like one tiny little die on it. The second one is two, and the bottom one is three, so you can feel which is which. So if you had this just like on your couch or something, you could pick it up without looking at it and tell the top from the bottom. So whichever buttons you set to control. Yeah. And then you can press each one, or you can long press each one.
Oh, nice.
So it's like two controls for each of these for six total scenes that can be programmed out of the box. Though, like we talked about before, you can do conditionals here if you want to get fancy. So, like, a single press on the top one could turn off, say we're looking at zones, like zone 1 or zone 2. So, one press could turn on or off a zone 2 based on if it's on or off already. So, if it's on, it would turn it off, and if it's off, it would turn it on. And then you could do a long press, and that could do zone 2. Then the second one you could program to your shades, and it could be similar that way. But that would give you almost, you know, unlimited, you know, commands here if you just keep using conditionals to get really specific with what you're doing based on the status of the lights in your home. But just to keep it easy, 6 scenes, long and short press on each of the buttons.
Gotcha.
So far for me, it's been really responsive. I haven't had many issues, but it's working over Bluetooth right now. Like on initial setup, it wasn't working, but that usually happens with buttons. You have to wait for it to kind of like propagate through your HomeKit system. Once it does, you're usually good. But yeah, I mean, it seems to work pretty much most of the time. I still have some times where it doesn't. It's kind of like it's coming out like a sleep state. It doesn't work on the first one, and then I'll do it again and it will work.
Gotcha.
If that makes sense. So it's just kind of odd. It doesn't, I'd say about, it's 80%, 85% of the time it works on the first try, but there's that 15% in there that is kind of like, I just closed my shades and it made some noise. But yeah, so there's like that small amount of time where it doesn't work perfectly. And I'm kind of, I don't know if it'll be a difference with Thread or not, but this is getting that Thread update that is supposed to fix that. So I'll be interested to see how that kind of changes the performance of this guy. Gotcha. Once it gets updated. Since it is battery operated, it would be technically like a child node. Like, it doesn't extend any of the network. It's an endpoint on your Thread mesh network. So it's not going to extend it to any other devices, but anything you have in your home that is working with Thread, that new Eve Energy, the new Apple TV. That's another reason, by the way, that I got that new Apple TV, is just extend that Thread network even further. Yeah. So that's a benefit there. But yeah, other than that, it's been a pretty solid little device. It has a matte front to it, which I like. It has a nice like matte finish to the front and then a glossy back to it. And it does have a good tactile feel, so it's not like a touch sensitive button. It's actually like press and it clicks, which I like. Nice. It doesn't have any like audio feedback, which isn't, I'm not saying it should always have that, but I have that Fibaro the button right, sitting on my desk. And with that guy, I'll press it, and there isn't the ability to turn on audio feedback with the button. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll press it and it doesn't trigger my scene, and it doesn't give me the audio feedback.
It's weird.
So that's why, let me see if I can do it. It's been sitting here not moving. See, there was no audio feedback, and my scene didn't trigger. But if I tried again, now you heard a chirp, and my scene was just set. So that's kind of what I'm seeing with like the Wemo sometimes. Like sometimes when it's coming out of that really cold state, it doesn't like operate right away.
Huh.
But you're still getting, it still clicks. You still think it did something. And same thing with the button. That's why I turned on the audio feedback on the button, so I know like, okay, did it actually register or did it not register?
Right, right.
And it's such a weird little quirk, but. Otherwise, this thing is pretty cool. I like it. Are you going to consider getting one of these guys? I don't know what kind of buttons you have. I know you like to use Siri so much for your stuff.
I do. The Fibaro button exclamation point. You know, it seems like a fun button. You just kind of slap it. But honestly, this Wemo stage is more my style. I may pick one up to be able to trigger some scenes without having to shout to the air. And, you know, Siri's not perfect, as we all know. And so if this thing, I don't know, could be more consistent, I think I would like it. And it definitely, it has that look. I definitely like it. And I have other Wemo devices. They've always worked well for me. So I don't know, I may try it. I may try to get one of these Wemo stages, and we'll let our listeners know what I think.
What I really like about it in terms of just like its software design is that it's done entirely through the Home app. Similar to how we talked about with like Logitech, everything is through the Home app. So there's no Wemo app at all that is needed. Even software updates are done fully through the Home app, which I think is huge. And it even has NFC setup, which I think ConnectSense might be the only other person I've seen use HomeKit NFC setup, right, even though it's been out for probably a couple years now. But it is really that seamless. Like, I took this thing out of the box and I just brought my phone near it, like once I put the battery in, but I brought my phone near it and it's like tapped on it and boom, it immediately popped up and was authenticated. You don't have to scan a code, nothing like that.
Right, right.
It's super easy, and that makes setup easier. You don't have to worry about saving that code because you can just use an NFC setup. I like that a whole lot. So that was a cool little touch to it. And I'm interested to see how the firmware updates will actually operate. Are they going to be done in the background automatically? Are they going to be more of a manual process, which is what I'd prefer, to actually see them show up as a manual update feature where I can actually hit update just like I could for any of my other devices. So we'll find out soon enough, because they really said Thread is coming like very soon, super soon. We will see how that comes. And there is that updated recently tab inside of the home app. So I'm going to watch for that and see if I see Wemo updated automatically or not. And just watching for that Thread support. So we'll touch back on this guy when Thread rolls out, and we'll see how performance has changed with the Thread functionality.
Very cool. All right. Well, listeners, let us know. What HomeKit stuff do you got going on? What Apple devices have you ordered recently? What do you think of AirTags if you got some of those? Tweet at Andrew and myself. Our Twitter handles are in the show notes. And don't forget to check out the other podcasts on Apple Insider. The Apple Insider podcast comes out every Friday, and Apple Insider Daily. Get the top Apple news headlines in just a few minutes. If you haven't yet, we would greatly appreciate a 5-star rating and review in Apple Podcasts. That'll help out the show.
I don't know if anyone who listens to our podcast knows on the video side, but recently, because there's not enough other news sources for all of you out there, doing a weekly news roundup show on the Apple Insider YouTube channel. So it usually drops early afternoon on Fridays, and I just basically break down all the rumors and stuff for the week. And it's handy because I can actually walk through, you know, the patents and everything else, and you can actually see what we're looking at, or you can just listen to it in the background. So it's kind of like a mini podcast. Usually it's like 10 to 15 minutes long, and I break out all the best news stories for the week so that you don't miss anything. So that's a new thing on the Apple Insider YouTube. I think by the time you guys listen to this, we'll have 3 episodes deep.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I did see those pop up, and I'll just link to the Apple Insider YouTube channel, and I'll link to the latest one of those roundup videos, and you can all check that out. They're pretty great. Good plug. And thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll catch you next time.